Hello and welcome to another episode of the Laura Sanzo podcast with your host, Laura Sanzo. Everyone's perception of the world is different based on their model of the world, and her goal is to celebrate that by building the most inclusive self-development podcast. Laura and her guests share their stories and share invaluable strategies from the world of science, spirituality, business, health, personal relationships, and everything in between. We cover it all. Get inspired, learn to welcome adversity, understand that failure is only feedback, and get ready to hear discussion on some of the most important issues facing us today. Enjoy the episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Laura Sanzo podcast. In this episode, we are looking at the world through the eyes of Marcy Warhap, who's a recognized expert on body image and self-esteem and founder of the Fit versus Fiction Body Image Workshops, which I can't wait to hear more about. This is incredible. She was named one of Canada's top 100 health influencers for 2018, 2019, 2020, and 2021 by Optimized Fitness Magazine. Congratulations on that. And she's the author of The Body Image Survival Guide for Parents, which as a mother of a 13-year-old daughter, I can't wait to hear more about this as well. And listen to this one, The Good Stripper, a soccer mom's memoir of lies, loss, and lap dances. I love the name, where she shares a raw and honest and intimate detail of her eye-popping journey to self-discovery. So welcome, Marcy.
Happy to be here.
So I had just said before we started to record it, I can't wait to hear your story. So can we start there? Because we're in 2021, 21st century, we have social media, we have the rise of the celebrity, and, you know, body image and self-esteem is something that we talk about on the daily. I would love to know more about your journey and where that journey with body image and self-esteem really started for you. Because I have a feeling it was way before social media.
Absolutely. And I think issue of body image issues and eating disorder issues are so misunderstood. I think people really see it as more of a vanity thing and think it is all about the appearance when really it's not. The way I see it is, because again, my body image issues absolutely led to a very severe eating disorder. And eating disorders aren't about food, believe it or not. Food, I see it as the weapon. I used it as a weapon to hurt myself, whether I was restricting it or I was binge eating it. That was the weapon, but that wasn't what the issue was. So it's way more, they're way more deceptive and devious than people think. So for me, it started when I was 17, and that was back in the 80s. So there was no Facebook, there was no Instagram, there was no TikTok. I mean, I remember getting my sister's Cosmopolitan magazine, like, and at front they would have the cover model, they would have their measurements. I remember, and I would look at time, and I remember thinking about it, but I was a very confident kid. I was very active. I was into sports. I was into dance. I was into theater. I was very confident in who I was as a person. I was outspoken. So on paper, I wasn't somebody who you'd ever think would have self-esteem issues. And I didn't until when I was 17, my older brother got sick, and my brother was to me everything. My parents had split up when I was quite young, and my father was out of the picture. And my brother, Billy, who was 5 years older than me, sort of took over as man of the house, but he was, I refer to him as the invisible armor I wore out in the world to protect me. And I adored him. And when he got sick, I remember, I mean, again, I was 17. So I was starting to think, is my weight okay? Because there were still, diets have always been a thing. They've been a thing forever, even without social media. But it was just a little voice. It wasn't yelling at me yet. But when Billy got sick, what I found was, looking back, I needed a distraction. I felt helpless. And I remember people would bring food to the hospital because that's what people do, right? You sort of nourish. And my thing was, I'm not going to eat. There was no logic behind it, but it was doing something. And then he passed away. And when he died, my whole world changed. And it was this feeling of, again, it wasn't an appearance thing. It was control. My life was out of control. At 17, you usually feel, that's when kids feel like, you know, nothing will happen. Nothing bad will happen. You feel like you're just indestructible. But I saw, oh my God, here was this boy at 21 years old who had been healthy all his life. He got sick. He died. I felt so incredibly unsafe. I say all the time that the minute before I heard he died was the last minute I felt safe for a very, very long time. So I felt the only thing I could control was myself. The only thing I had 100% control over was my body, what I ate, what I didn't eat, how much I moved, how much I didn't move. And that became my obsession. And then it became, okay, I need to make myself as small as I possibly can. Because it was also a distraction. It was easier for me to focus on that than the loss. I couldn't handle the loss. And my self-esteem was affected because I felt like he was a superstar. Like to me, the world needed him. He was such a good person. I didn't think I was that special. So I felt guilty for still being here. So I felt if I was going to be here instead of him, which is how I saw it, I couldn't be average. I had to be special. And to my 17-year-old brain, I thought, well, if I can't be super funny or super smart, like maybe I'll be pretty. And to my 17-year-old brain, that meant skinny. So I went on this path of all became about food and about my body. And that's how that ended up taking over my life for over 20 years.
I'm getting goosebumps because actually our very first episode of this season was three females, all of different ages, all talking about their experiences with eating disorders. One was in her 20s. One just started her journey with the eating disorder later in life. And then one was probably in her 50s, but started at the same age as you, and all the same underlining things in terms of the control, in terms of just wanting to be seen, right? Just that was, I remember one of the guests was talking about like, she just wants to be seen. So being skinny was kind of keeping her in the spotlight from the other. It's interesting just to like outsider to just listen to the stories and just see all the underlining. Like I knew you were going to say.
Absolutely. Crazy. Well, it's funny too, because it does become your identity. Like I remember at one point thinking, like I didn't like it when I would see people and they'd say to me, they'd say, you look terrible. There was one part of society that I looked great. Yeah. When I was too thin. But then there was the other part, people who knew me who'd be like, oh, you need to eat, you're too small. But it was still, I was still hearing something. So part of me thought, okay, but if I get better and I'm not Marcy with the eating disorder, then who am I? Like that was my entire identity. And I was afraid as much as I hated it, it had become all of who I was. So without that, then I would really disappear.
How did you go from that to being a servant leader with that message?
It was a long journey. You know, here's the thing though, and it's really important to say, I think, again, there were so many times when I tried to get help, when it really did, it took everything from me. When you have very low self-esteem and you try to do anything in life, it's such a huge strike against you, because I feel like it's like trying to build a house on quicksand. Like you just, it's your whole foundation. And if your whole foundation deep down, you don't feel good enough for anything or worthy of anything, you can't build on that. So it impacted me my entire life. Even though I had moments where I thought I was over it, moments when I thought I was healthy, it was still there. And it wasn't until I was in my 30s, a mom. And I, like I said, I tried to get help before, but I think it was either I was maybe ready, but the program wasn't right, or I wasn't ready. And this time I had hit such a low where I had had times in my life before when I felt like I couldn't go on and maybe I didn't deserve to go on, but I just had me. At this point, both my parents had passed, you know, my brother had passed. But I had these two children that needed a mom. I had given up on myself, but I couldn't give up on them. And I knew that having lost my mom when I was in my 20s, I didn't want them growing up without me. So that was a huge catalyst for me to get help. And I searched, and I was not believed. I've talked about how I took myself to a crisis clinic and spoke to a special eating disorder specialist and told him how I had been starving myself for years, but then binging like crazy. And he didn't believe me. He told me I didn't look big enough. I didn't look sick enough.
Yeah.
And sent me home, which is a big mistake too, because people think that they can tell how healthy someone is by how they look. You can't. But I really, at this point, I needed to get better. And I searched and I found a recovery program, and it was tough. And I went into it and it completely changed how I was. And it was the right program at the right time with the right incentive being my children. And that so changed my life and gave me such a freedom that I never expected, that I felt actually at first I thought I never want to deal with this again. I don't want to talk about it anymore because it had taken over my life. But unless you move to a deserted island where there are no people.
Yeah.
As you said, the body image, self-esteem stuff is everywhere. So my kids were young at the time, and I hated the messages they were getting at school about health. It seemed like they were confusing health gain with weight loss. Like everything was about weight loss. Everything was about dieting. And I hated that message. And I knew how dangerous it was. So I literally walked into my kid's school one day and I spoke to the principal and I said, I don't like this message. I want to say something else. And I remember he said, okay, come in on Friday. And I was like, What?
Meanwhile, I was trying to find like a connection to get into a school board to do a workshop. Nothing. Or something.
So I went Friday, I'd gone in with a bristle board and some pictures, and I just told my story to the eighth graders. And the thing was, they took to it because it was stuff that they could relate to and they wanted to talk about. And it became, I never planned to kind of go in and go, I'm going to create this program. It wasn't that. It was just as a mom, it was as somebody who had suffered for so long. I had seen the damage I was doing to my mother and my sister with what I was doing to my, I didn't want parents to feel so powerless over the worst thing as a parent is seeing your kid in pain and feeling powerless. I didn't want that. I didn't want kids to suffer through what I had suffered through. So I just felt compelled to talk about it. And then, you know, one kid would tell their parent, who would tell their sibling, who would tell another school. And then I was just getting asked to speak. And that's just, and I still for the longest time just felt that I was doing it as a mom or somebody who had battled it. And at the time, because social media wasn't a thing yet, because this was like 2007, Facebook was just starting, nobody was talking about it. It wasn't like it is now. It's not a pretty glamorous, not that any addiction or disorder is, but there's an embarrassment, a shame that comes with food. And nobody wanted to talk about it, but I was talking about it. And it just kind of took off from there.
The other episode we really wanted to do is draw attention to the fact that it's all ages, because, you know, it's still, I think, very much considered a young girl disease. And that's why I wanted to ensure that I had women of in later seasons of their life, because it's still very much, you know, something that you get in high school or something that you get in elementary school. So I love that point. And I love what you do, because I, like I said, I have a 13-year-old daughter. I want to see how old your kids are now, but I have a 13-year-old daughter who obviously, you know, at 13 years old, you're coming into your body. So she's becoming conscious of how she looks. And I'm over 40, but you know, when you go into your 40s, your body starts to change and the things that you were doing don't work anymore. So you're kind of having to like find a new relationship with your new body, regardless of outside of food and outside exercise, such a fine line dimension. But I want to ask you a quick question. Do you feel that it was until you healed your eating disorder that you were finally able to grieve your brother?
I think anyone who knows me knows I still struggle with that. I think it helps. I remember being in my eating disorder program, and because they hit it from a physical point and emotional point in so many different ways that it did. I remember it did help. Now, those loss is tough. I mean, I struggle with the loss of my brother and loss of my mother. They've both been gone over 20 years and it's, I still feel it, but that's the price you pay for love, right? I was so lucky to have such incredible support. And I honestly believe if I didn't have them at the beginning of my life, then I wouldn't have survived everything that happened to me afterwards. Like they gave me such a great foundation. But I will say that my recovery, if I didn't have my recovery, and again, it's that foundation we talked about, then my life would still be quicksand. The grief would just be part of the things that would weigh me down. So absolutely, I still totally believe that if you don't, until you can feel, and not perfect, I mean, we're not, I don't believe that you have to completely love yourself in order to love others or be loved, or that's too much pressure, you know, but to have a sort of a strong sense of self absolutely make other things easier. That makes sense.
No, definitely. So we talked about, we live in a world where, you know, social media is not going anywhere. It's just probably going to get more prominent. And I find, I had this conversation with another health coach once. I find like there's such a fine line between being body positive and then health, whether it's like underweight or overweight. Can you just speak a little bit to that in terms of what you feel in terms of as a health professional and having endured what you have gone through? Because I feel like when I look on social media, and you kind of alluded to this as well, like you'll see a female with like muscular and she'll have people that love that and hate that. And then you'll see somebody who is, you know, maybe a little heavier than they should be, but they're body positive. And then they'll get the same kind of pro and con feedback. So it's like, there's like a no win.
There isn't, because we're very, very warped when it comes to our physical health and appearance. I always say we confuse physical appearance with physical fitness. You can't look at somebody and know, unless we're talking major extremes, either way, overweight or underweight. You honestly cannot, when I was bodybuilding and I looked at the cover of a fitness magazine, yeah, there were some people who thought I looked ill and then there were people who thought I looked amazing. Yeah. And I was ill. You cannot judge someone else. But here's the thing. I think the whole body positivity thing is very confused by a lot of people. And I didn't start it, so I can just give my opinion on it. But here's the thing that people get confused. Being body positive, all it means is that we believe that every body deserves respect. That is it. It's not, people go, oh, but if that person's overweight and they're being body positive, that's unhealthy. No, it's not. Because everybody, it doesn't matter how big it is or how small it is, that person deserves respect. That is all that it means. And you should absolutely love your body. When people have said to me, because I've been criticized for promoting obesity because I believe in just healthy bodies. And they say, oh, so if someone's overweight, they should love their body. Yeah, they should. No, that doesn't mean, again, my opinion, loving who you are isn't the same as loving where you are. So you can be, let's say, overweight and want, and maybe not feel great and want to feel healthier. That's fine. That's not being body positive, but you will not get healthy if you hate your body. Even if you are overweight, you should still absolutely love and respect yourself and love and respect your body. Your worth doesn't change whether you're underweight, overweight, or exactly the weight that you're supposed to be. So that's the thing. You cannot hate your body healthy. So if you want to get, whether you feel you're too small, you're too big, if you want to get your body to a place where you feel the best, you could only do that if you love your body. And because you love your body, you want it to feel as good as it can. And we can't get used to or focus on a number or a size. You can't. My thing is, a lot of people, the problem is you pick a size or you pick a number. That's the weight I want. And then you will kill yourself to try to get into that size. And that might not be your size. The way we should do it instead is, okay, I'm going to eat better. Now, I'm not a dieter. I eat chocolate every day. Like, so that just means everything in moderation, in my opinion. And sometimes the moderation goes out the window. Like, life should be about pleasures. Life shouldn't be hard and about restricting the stuff that you like. Be active because it feels good, not because you feel guilty if you don't. But when you're doing the things that make you feel good, your body will go to where it's supposed to be. And that might be a different place than you think it should be in your head. But we have to let our bodies tell us where we're supposed to go, not try to squeeze ourselves into something society tells us that we're supposed to look like.
I love that. Two things I want to say to that, because I love that so much, because I feel, one, the messaging that comes sometimes from the health community, and I get it from a marketing perspective, you want to hit people's pain points, right? Like, that's what we do when we market things, right? Mm-hmm. But in terms of somebody that works with energy, exactly to your point, you know, if somebody feels bad, then energetically they're going to be blocked, right? That's why there's people that they're doing everything right, but they're not having the results. But as soon as they like leave that partner that is toxic or leave that job that is toxic, things just seem to just melt off, right? So I love that. I loved what you said so much, because sometimes, like I said, I read things coming from the health community and I get it, but it's just like, and I'm like, oh, I'm like, you're making people feel bad about themselves. Like,
but it's not health. People, sorry, but that's my biggest gripe right now is with the fitness industry. I think it's doing the most damage. I think people are expecting to hear stuff that's not so true from the diet industry, because we all know that they want to profit, but it's the fitness industry that's sneaky. Because they come at you with a health aspect. That's why you'll see if a plus size model on the cover of a magazine, and immediately the comments will be, but that's promoting obesity. That's not healthy. But when you have a model on a cover of a magazine who hasn't eaten in weeks, nobody's concerned about their health, because that we think that that's the way you're supposed to look. Or there are people who just like the way that looks. So because it's appealing to them, it's attractive to them, they're okay with that. But the minute they see something that they personally don't like, or the fitness industry, I told this, is not okay, then they feel that they can say something critical because they take the health. It's not healthy. How can you say it's not healthy? They say scientifically that a body that is bigger but is active is healthier than sedentary and thin. It's what we do with our bodies. So again, we cannot judge how fit or healthy someone is by how they look. And I think that's a horrible message that the fitness industry gets. It's the whole, you know, we're supposed to feel guilty if we rest. No, rest is really important. Like, it's really, so I'll see tons of memes about, you know, never take a day off. And no, absolutely take as many days off as you, but there's so much guilt and shame attached to it that it's so much more unhealthy. And the stress attached to it is more unhealthy than anything else. The stress over eating a cookie is going to do way more damage for you than actually eating a cookie.
Definitely. And this is what I was going to say. I remember now, again, to your point, because I have like things in my closet from when I was in my 20s, right? And they don't fit me, you know, after two kids, and I'm somebody that to wash my everything because my body fluctuates. But I'm at the point that I'm like, okay, you know what? Maybe I'm not meant to wear the same size as I did when I was in my 20s. As simple as that.
Here's the thing. I always say, like, we expect as we get older, we expect to change emotionally because we learn stuff. We go through stuff. We expect to change intellectually because, again, we go through stuff. We learn stuff. But we don't expect to change physically. And that's the weirdest thing, because our bodies, I mean, I'm 51 and my body has changed so much, and it still changes. Like, I can post a video and I've had somebody say, oh, you look like you're getting a little weight. And then like 2 weeks later, I don't. And then but we can't, like, of course our bodies are going to change. Of course they're going to change. Like, how can you, this is what we put out in the world physically every single day. And it works really hard to keep us alive, like every single day. And we are so hard on it because it doesn't look the way it did 30 years ago. Oh my God, I'm not the same person I was in any other way when I was 20. So why would I expect to be the same person physically? It doesn't make any sense at all.
I had seen a post that you did on Instagram that I loved. I think it was a half shot of you when you were competing, like in a fitness competition, and people thought you were so healthy, and I guess mentally you weren't, and emotionally and spiritually, I would assume. And then another one where you weren't competing and you just looked like an average woman, and people thought that you were not healthy or had gained weight or such. So it's just crazy.
Well, and the thing with that is, and I wasn't even competing. I was just training with a trainer who was getting me to look like, and I didn't have the confidence, but I was, when I had that picture taken, I was down to a quarter cup of water a day for like 6 weeks. I wasn't eating solid food. I mean, I was not in great shape at all, but I absolutely looked the part. And then in the other picture, that's when I was doing interview about an article I'd written for the Huffington Post, and I was in New York. And I remember thinking, like, I felt I had recovery by that point. I got my hair down for the first time for a show. And, you know, I felt pretty good about myself. And I'm talking about body image and self-esteem. And it was for Fox News, actually. And what happened was, should have expected it. The comments that I got were, why is she talking about health? She's overweight. You know, why is she talking about health? You know, she's promoting obesity. And it was like, are you kidding me? It was ridiculous. So, but it did, like, for a minute, it kind of threw me. I remember. And I'm like, nope, I have too much recovery. Let this happen. And just back to your point about social media, one thing I will say is, I always say that social media and the society and the diet industry, they didn't make me sick, but they sure as hell kept me sick. My disorder, my eating disorder, goes far deeper than media and marketing and all of that. However, eating disorders are the only disorders that are cheered on by society. Any other addiction or disorder that you have, you're not going to have people cheering for you to continue it. They're going to want you to get better. But I know so many people who have shared with me that they've gone through things where they've gotten the flu or they've gotten really major illnesses and lost weight. And people say, oh, you lost it. Good. How'd you do it? Oh, I wish I could. I had a mother say to me once, I wish, you know, my daughter's a little chubby. I wish she could catch a little anorexia for a little while. Like, no, my God, you don't. So it's a tough thing to recover from, because I remember when I was trying to recover and think I was so terrified of gaining weight. And because even though I knew I was getting healthier, you knew that there were going to be people who were going to be like, what do you mean you're having a chocolate bar? Like, everything that I knew was a positive step for me, society said, well, you're not going to the gym at 2 o'clock in the morning anymore. Well, that's that motivated. No, I'm just healthier now. But it's the only disorder where the bad behavior, the unhealthy behavior is cheered on and glorified. And that's what makes it so hard to recover.
And it's also necessity. Like, food is a necessity to survive. So it's not like, you know, gambling or alcohol. If you didn't drink and you didn't gamble,
right? You can't abstain. You can't abstain. Right. You wouldn't say to some. I'm not comparing disorders or addictions, but you can't say to somebody. You know, you wouldn't say to somebody with a drug addiction, okay, so just 3 times a day, yeah, have a healthy amount. You can't. But you also can't say to somebody with a disorder, just abstain from it. You know, you have to face it every single day. And it's also the type of thing where nowadays, anywhere you go, you're faced with it. Whether you go to a library, they'll have food. If you go to a gas station, they have food. Any place that sells anything will also sell food. Like, you don't have to seek it out. You don't have to go to back alleys to buy it. You don't have to be a certain age to get it. Like, it is so there. So it's a thing, your disorder constantly. It's also a way of people expressing love or expressing support, or, you know, somebody dies, you bring food. Somebody celebrating something, you bring food. You know, it's always food. And it's a tough thing to eat around people when you feel like you're being judged. It's also a tough thing to say no thank you, because sometimes they feel, oh, but I just didn't want, and people will say, oh, but I baked it or I made it, and you feel there's a guilt there. So people do not realize how tough it is to do, and they don't realize how dangerous it is. I think most people don't know that eating disorders have the highest mortality rate of all mental health issues. And I don't think people see it as something that kills you. And it does.
And I think it's something generational too, subconsciously generational. I know this past weekend, I had some of my husband's friends over for his birthday, and we had food, obviously. But it was like, when I saw people's plates empty, it just, as somebody that grew up in a European Italian household, it's like, okay, so I'm not being a good hostess if they're not eating, you know, or if they're not leaving with food. And I don't know why that person wasn't eating, or eating as I feel a male should be eating. But it was just subconsciously from generational program. I was like, okay, like, he's not eating, he's not having a good time. You know, I just connected that kind of that.
Right.
Association to
it. We have to back off with that for sure. Same thing with good drinking, right? There's sometimes people, if they're drinking, they want everyone to drink. And some people just don't, for a lot of reasons, just don't. And so we have to start projecting our feelings about things onto other people.
I want to talk about society for a second, and back to what we're talking to. I've seen, like, Old Navy has changed their marketing a little bit. I don't know if you've seen on their television commercials, they have models of all sizes. Mm-hmm. Victoria's Secret has changed their marketing and their campaign to have women of all sizes and backgrounds and such, you know, within this industry for such a long time. What more do you think society can really do?
It's a tough one. I mean, I love that there's the good and the bad of social media. So even though there's still so much negativity as far as body stuff, there's still, I don't even like the before and after videos, that the transformation videos of bodies. I was big, now I'm small. Our bodies are supposed to, and then they feel like a failure if they gain some. There's still all these negative messages. At least now there's a lot of the body positive stuff. At least now there's a lot more of that. That's really great. I think it amazes me that stores haven't jumped on it sooner, because I never understood why every mannequin was ridiculously small, because you'd see the clothes on that mannequin and then a normal bodied person puts it on. It doesn't look the way it does either in the magazine or on the mannequin. And we feel that there's something wrong with us. If the clothes were on women of all sizes, on mannequins of all sizes, and then we could sort of see ourselves in that, our expectations are different. So for me, it's so weird to see only one size model walk down a runway. Mm-hmm. Who could relate to that? Like, it just from a monetary perspective, I don't understand why it's taking them so long. I think it's still going to take a long time. I think this is something that is so ingrained. I think that everybody is really careful now, but people are careful now about certain things that they say about all sorts of people, but feel just free rein to talk about people who they feel are overweight. I feel like people still feel that they can put down people who are overweight. They still see people who are not the way that they think they're supposed to look as lazy. And it's so wrong. So there's a lot of work to do. I do think that seeing commercials I love it every time I see. I think I'd love to get to the point where it's not surprising.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like when you see commercials and I remember the first time there was a commercial, I think it was for cereal, and it was an interracial couple. And everyone was like, holy, wow, you know? And now I'm surprised if I see a commercial that doesn't have interracial family or something. And that's great. Or same-sex couples now. You see a lot of commercials now and they'll have, and that's great. And I think I can't wait for the day when it's just like, oh, people, you know, it's just like, it's not even a surprise anymore that people aren't going to freak out when there's a plus-size model on the cover of a magazine, because like, there are all sorts of people in that. So I think it's just continuing in this way, and hopefully it'll just continue to change. But it's changing, but it's not changing fast enough, in my opinion. People are still suffering with the criticism that they get. I know people who post videos on social media and are terrified of the comments that they're going to get, you know, because people are still nasty. But hopefully we'll just keep going. It's way better than it was 30 years ago.
I'm starting to even see on TikTok videos of like reverse, like you talk about the transformation, but it's people that have either just, you know, had disorders or just have been underweight and now are gaining weight and feel really good, whether it's like building muscle or such. So it's kind of reverse transformations almost.
Yeah, well, for sure. I think that's sort of what I did with that picture that you were talking about. You know, people thought I was, and this is where, for sure. I just think that there's got to be, eventually there'll be less emphasis on how our bodies look just in general. Right. And that, again, there's so much pressure we put on ourselves and about how this vessel looks, but oh my God, the stuff that it has to do for us every day. And we're so hard on it. You know, we're so hard on our bodies and they do so much for us. So I've said before that my recovery, I thought it meant that I was going to wake up every day and just be like, I look amazing. And that's not what it is. You know, there are days when I do feel like that. There are days when I don't feel like that, but I always love my body. I went through too many years saying I hate my body and I will never, ever feel that way again.
So I think that brings us beautifully into your book, The Body Image Survival Guide for Parents. I would assume that'd be one of the main things for parents as advice is not to hate your body in front of your kids.
Absolutely. That is the number one thing. If I had to give a tip to parents, my number one thing would be love your body and love your body in front of your kids. Let your kids see you love your body. That is the greatest tip. Yes, there are going to be outside influences 100%. But when they come home and they see the positive messages, when instead of saying, you know, my tummy's big, it's like, I love my tummy. This is where you were. This is where you put your head when you're watching TV. You know, instead of my arms are too big, it's like, I get to hug you with my arms. Not my thighs are too big, but I get to dance with my legs. I get to run. I get to play. This is what we need to do. We need to glorify what our bodies can do over how they look. And I find that to be so important. When I was writing my book, the hardest chapter for that book was the part about mothers and grandmothers when they didn't feel good about themselves. And that trickled down to their kids and a lot of trauma that kids felt with moms who were terrified of them gaining weight. That carries with you for a really, really long time. And look, I came from a mother who didn't worry about her body. She was in great shape. She didn't think about it. I never heard her say anything good or bad. Like, she did everything right. And I still ended up with eating disorder. But at least I felt safe at home. So I think it's crucial that we make sure. And I like, even if you're not feeling it, your kids have to see you love your body just for what it is or what it does.
It's interesting where these thoughts originate in kids. Like I said, I have a daughter who's 13. So that's like a given, right? Female and such. But then I have a son who's 10 who has autism, higher functioning autism. And over the course of COVID, I would say, because they were remote the whole time, he just started talking. He's always been like a typical stereotypical Italian boy, like very sturdy, right? And it's funny because it's just over the course, I would say the last couple of years, he became so body conscious and saying things like before he would like to snack on chips. Now he doesn't, he's like, no, I don't want anything unhealthy. You know what I mean? But it's just surprising to me how conscious kids are at such a young age. And my son, who isn't even neurotypical, you know, it's like, oh, I can't do that because I'm too fat. And it's just not really, like we talk about it a little bit at home, but it's not, you know what I mean? Like we eat normally. And so it's not something that he's kind of grown up with. It's really mind blowing how it's just society. It's just,
that's what I said. It's so huge. Yeah. I mean, there are kids in eating disorder treatment programs who are 5 years old. I mean, I remember getting a call from a parent years ago and they told me that their kid was, didn't want to wear their winter coat. They got a call from the principal. They wouldn't wear their winter coat and it was freezing outside. They said that it was because they felt it made them look too fat and they were in kindergarten. I mean, this isn't just a teenage girl thing. This is boys. This is girls. And with boys, they struggle in a different way too, because A, they don't verbalize it. They don't vocalize it the same way, which is dangerous. But also there are boys who feel they get it from both ends. Either they feel that they're too fat and they're not thin enough, or they feel like they're too small and they're not muscular enough. And I used to talk about, and I think I talked about it in my book too, about how I used to talk about my presentations for sure, where you have a lot of tween shows and you've got the actors who are playing teenagers who are like literally in their 30s, all late 20s or 30s. So they have these bodies of adults, but they're portraying younger kids. And so the younger kids are going, why don't I look like that? I mean, so it's such an impossible standard to try to live up to that causes self-esteem issues as well. So I've been doing this. I've been speaking up since 2007. So and there's still a lot of the same issues. For someone like me, it's very frustrating still to see that it's the same issues. It's getting better because there are more people speaking out on the other side. But even when you said, you know, you said your daughter's 13, so, you know, it's a given. Why is it a given? It shouldn't be a given, right? It shouldn't be a given. And I'd like to see the day when it's not a given. I was asked by Dove years ago to interview an Olympian about body image stuff. And the reason was that statistically young girls in Canada were dropping out of sports, and they were dropping out of sports because they felt that they didn't look good enough, because even our athletes are held to a certain standard to look a certain way. And that's another tip I would give to parents, is get your children involved in something, but figure out what it is that they like. If they like art, if they like music, if they like sports, but whatever it is that they love, I would encourage it, because what you're doing is you're encouraging a talent that it has nothing to do with how they look. And you can't, styles change all the time, right? Being tall could be in, being short could be in, having dark hair could be in 1 year, having freckles could be in, you know, big boobs could be in 1 year, small, like you cannot keep up with that. So we're always setting ourselves up for disaster. But if you have a talent, if you have a skill, if you have something you love, nobody can take that away from you. And that's something that a child can feel pride in and carry that through. So I suggest absolutely is to figure out what it is that your child is interested in, support them in that, encourage them in that, so they can really focus on what they can do over how they look.
And I'm sure it'll give them a nice building community as well, especially if they're part of a team or something. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure I get this title right. The Good Stripper, Soccer Mom's Memoir of Lies, Loss, and Lap Dances. So I'm sure this was, again, decades of experiences that was the catalyst of this book. However, from the title, if you could give us, what can people expect when they're picking up this book?
Okay, so it's a little different than you'd probably expect from the book. The dancing, there was dancing in my history, not for that long, but it really goes back to starting with my low self-esteem and how when that changed me, and it really did change me. Before my brother died, I felt like I could be anything, do anything. And then after he died, I really felt like I wasn't good enough for anything. And that set me up to be completely unprepared for the people that would come into my life and the circumstances. And I did deal with quite a bit of trauma. I had losses. I had, you know, lost my mother when I was pregnant, had multiple miscarriages, lost a baby. I became very ill when I was 29 and spent months in the hospital and was not expected to survive. I had to learn how to walk again, talk again, breathe again on my own. And when you go through multiple trauma and you couldn't catch my breath. So I couldn't deal with one before the next one hit. And I got to a point where I had suffered something that was explained to me as traumatic overload. And I got to a point where I couldn't handle anymore. And I was in a relationship and I was a mother at this point, but I couldn't take anymore. And my relationship at that point had taken a turn. and I didn't feel supported the way I needed to be supported. And I felt that I was being manipulated, and it's not having the support that I needed. I started to believe that I served two purposes in the world. And one was to be the best mother I could be, because again, I adored my children. I had lost my mother before my children were born. And it was so important for me that their lives were just as perfect as they could be. And they felt loved every second. And then the other thing was, I felt that I was still battling my eating disorder. I still felt that the only thing I had to offer the world was myself physically. Mm-hmm. And I started dancing. So I started stripping as a way to make some money. And because I felt that that's all I had to offer. And I did that for, I didn't do that for a very long period of time. However, it led to me sort of sharing my body with whoever showed me some interest. Because again, it was my way of feeling, goes back to the control. Food and sex are very similar. And again, I felt very simultaneously completely detached from my body while being hyper-focused on it. So I was detached from it and could use it and be used for it, but also so focused on it by not eating and starving myself and over-exercising so that I could still be worthy to other people. Even if I knew in my head, they don't really think much of me. But for that brief period of time, I could feel like I was something. And trying to live this sort of double life where I was this vixen when I wasn't with my kids, and then trying to be the best soccer mom when I was with my kids, it takes its toll on you. And I talk about very openly about what my life was like at that time. I talk about how it nearly destroyed me. And I talk about how I found my way back. But then the thing that makes it different too, is that when I got myself out of it and I got into recovery for the eating disorder and I was doing all my work with body image, there was a part of me that felt so much shame over what I had done in my past that I started to feel unworthy of the accolades that I got. I felt like I was so afraid that somebody would see me doing something good for other people and go, but you don't know what she's really like. And I was afraid of my past coming out and hurting my children. And I relapsed. I relapsed with my food. I stopped doing my workshops because I felt like, how could I talk about self-esteem if I wasn't feeling good about myself? And that was a very, very dark time. And then I talk about how I pulled myself out of that. Mm-hmm. And that is when my life completely changed. It was getting out of a toxic relationship. Because I'm on my phone. It was getting out of an unhealthy relationship. And it was figuring out who I was and realizing that I had to stop looking at my mistakes and I had to start looking at my survival. And so my book is dedicated to anyone who might be struggling to forgive themselves for the mistakes they made when they were just trying to survive, because that's all I was doing. And I did the best I could with what I had, and I would act very differently now, but I can't, but I've learned to accept every chapter of my book. And, you know, I don't, there are things I regret. We're not supposed to regret things. There are things I regret. Anytime I hurt somebody else, I regret that. And I'm okay with regretting that. I never want to feel okay with hurting somebody else, but I had to stop hurting myself and I had to stop beating myself up. And it's only when we can release the shame and the guilt that we can feel free. That changed my life. And that's what I help people with now, is releasing the shame and the guilt, because that does more damage than anything else, is definitely the shame.
So would you say that was the turning point, I guess, for you in the last 6 years, was releasing those emotions and forgiving?
100%. It was, and I'll tell you something, writing the book was great, but in releasing it, I prepared myself for the worst. I thought people would hate me. I thought, you know, not many people knew I was writing it. And I remember my sister, for example, being scared for me that I was going to release and the backlash that I was going to get, but I needed to do it for some reason. And I found that it's been the opposite. I found that people message me now daily and will say, I feel less alone now. Thank you for sharing your story, because I can relate. They won't relate to every part of my story. Not everyone had a stepfather that was a bank robber or there's a lot of craziness in my life. But they can relate to loss. They can relate to feeling insecure. There's a lot of parts that they can relate to. And I feel that it's not sharing only the successes that empower people. I really feel that if we can share the stuff that, like the dirty stuff, the messy stuff, the hard stuff, if we can share that, that's what connects us. It's when we feel we've gone through something and we feel like a lot of things, especially with eating disorder, you feel like a terrible person because you've done certain things. When we keep it in our heads, we feel alone. But if you share it and somebody else says, oh my gosh, I've done that too, or I feel that way too, instantly you feel connected and you realize, maybe I'm not such a bad person. Maybe it's not all my fault. There's freedom in that and there's healing in that. And so I think it's incredibly important. I was prepared for the backlash and I was strong enough for it. I haven't gotten it, not really, a little bit here and there, but that's fine. I sort of realized also that the hard part was going through what I went through. Being judged for it, I can survive that. If I can survive going through the stuff I went through, then I can sure as hell survive someone judging me for it.
And also if they're judging you, it's because it has nothing to do with you. It's just you're bringing up something for them that they're not ready to deal with themselves and do.
Absolutely.
Done. So let's talk about the workshops, the fit versus fiction. You're still doing them, right? So people could still.
I do them. I haven't done them in schools. I can do them online. So I do Zoom either for, I do one-on-one. I work with parents and kids. I work with just parents. I work with kids. I do groups where I did, like I worked during COVID. I did a workshop with a Girl Scout troop in LA. Which was fun. So yeah, so we do different kinds of workshops. It can either be a one-off or it could be several. I also do now, since my book came out, sort of a self-esteem mentoring kind of program. I find a lot of people need an outlet to talk about shame and guilt and body image stuff, a whole bunch of things for all ages. And so I do workshops and sort of counseling sessions on that as well. Because I think what people say is, whatever it is they're going through, I've probably been through it. but I'm a safe place to go to. And so yeah, so I'm doing, again, it's the fit versus fiction workshops, kids and parents, but then it's expanded to self-esteem issues in general.
The books are on Amazon, right?
Yes. And chapters. Second, my memoir is in stores in Indigo Chapters as well as online. And then Body Image is online, Amazon.
So in addition to the expansion of the fit and the fiction, what else can we expect from you in the last couple months of 2021?
I have an audiobook coming out, an audio version I'm working on. That should be coming out soon, the second book. And it's funny because whenever I'm asked that question, I always think about my kids who joke that I never plan 5 minutes ahead. So with me, my life changes so quickly. I like to keep things open. So we'll see. I'm not exactly sure what's coming up, but I've got some things in the works. I'm always excited to surprise people. So I like to keep you guessing.
Well, we're excited to hear. As we come to an end, is there anything that is being called for you to share that we may not have touched on that you are, like I said, feeling called to share with the community?
The only thing I'll say is this, and I've learned this over the last couple of years. If you get to the end of your life and your last thought is, I hope I didn't make anyone uncomfortable, then you're doing yourself a disservice. This is it, you know, regardless of what our beliefs are, like this is our time. Use it to make yourself happy. Like eat the things that make you happy. Listen to the music that you like. Spend time with the people that you like. Love yourself enough to love your life. Be as big as you want to be. Just enjoy life. Stress less and enjoy your life. And don't worry about, we say it all the time, you know, don't worry about other people, but really you get to the end of your life. You don't want to, nobody is waking up every day thinking, oh, I wonder what Marcy is going to think about what I do today. You know, just be true to yourself and don't let fear of judgment keep you from living your best life.
I love that. Thank you. We'll put it in the show notes, but where can people find you on social media and website and such?
I'm pretty easy to find because everything's really just my name. So it's just Marcy Warheft on Facebook, on Instagram, even on TikTok, and fitversusfiction.com.
Thank you so much. This was such a great conversation. Thank you so much for your time, Marcy.
It's great. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed that episode of the Laura Sanso podcast. Thank you to our guests. To stay connected to host Laura Sanso, follow her at I Am Laura Sanso or at the Laura Sanso podcast on Instagram. To learn more about Laura, go to www.laurasanso.com.